When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello, Gary.
Hello, Guy.
How are you doing?
Well, I'm looking forward to the Cov, who's coming on now. I mean, this is not part three, because we've done his life part one and part two. This is just a chat with David Coverdale, because he's got another box set out, and it's the 50th anniversary of Deep Purple. Well, him joining Deep Purple.
Which is amazing when you think about, which is like the start of... And that was, I think that's Deep Purple Mark III by the time he joined.
Yes, it was. And I don't think there's ever a need for an excuse to talk to David Coverdale on this show. We don't know. I mean, we live in fear, don't we, of what's about to come, because we don't know what he's got in store for us and what he'll drag us down.
Exactly, because we don't really... Yeah, because we've been through his career. He's one of those, but you can always revisit and there'll always be something else. Always.
Yeah. Yeah, so...
And he's a force of nature anyway. He was last time.
So should we tune in Lake Tahoe?
Let's get him on.
Welcome to the Rock on Tours.
Okay, guys, I'm ready.
Well, it's a big tune for sure. I actually wrote that originally for Tina Turner.
Of course, I had gone and found Joni Mitchell down in Florida and brought her back.
I've listened to a few of them and they've been really good, man. I've been sitting in the back of the car coming into London. They're brilliant.
That caused a big problem in the band, actually. I was having too much fun.
Thank you guys for still being around, still making music, still being into it, and doing this podcast. It's fabulous.
Well, I get the feeling that us three should go for a pint. That's what I think.
I'm in a band now. It's called Roxy Music.
You know this thing about the 10,000 hours of experience?
Oh, yeah.
Get good at something. When we recorded Arnold Lane, we'd done about 50 hours.
The Rock on Tours podcast with Gary Kemp and Guy Pratt.
Keep on rocking!
We're recording. We're recording. We record from the top. Do you want to...
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Do you want to... Are you ready?
Oh, look at these handsome devils. God, I'm doing my own tech here. What the fuck is that?
David,
darling,
you are the godfather of Rock on Tours.
Oh, my God.
Third time. We love having you on. People love having you on. Social media always says, get Coverdale back on.
True.
He's the best. I don't know.
I could come on, do the fucking weather, anything. Come on, put me to work. But I got to tell you, I sent Guy recently, I'm sure, to talk to Nikki and David. The sphere is made for you guys. The sphere, I swear to God, I told well-connected people in Claire Audio and all this, I said, get a message. I don't have a direct line for David anymore, but tell them they would fucking own the sphere.
You're talking about Floyd.
Doing the whole Dark Side, the whole any fucking thing. I swear to God, I saw it and I was going, who the fuck's playing? It sounds like you too. And there was like four ants in this tiny fucking, galaxy of, Floyd have got to do it, man. Yeah. Tell Nikki, send my love.
Thank you so much, though, but it does kind of beg the question that do you even need a band in there?
Well, I don't think it's big enough for a rave. It's breathtaking what I've seen.
No, absolutely, same here. But I would have thought, even just sort of a visual based experience. You don't actually need people because there is no focal point.
Yeah, it's no, correct, absolutely. But it's like a planetarium, a voyage through the cosmos.
Exactly.
Are you kidding? I'd be there with a spliff and a fucking tag. Come on.
When you two aren't on, they do show a movie that is made for it in 18K.
Well, that was Dennis Villeneuve, I think. The Villeneuve of him. I think he did like a huge artsy-fartsy thing for there. But, like IMAX, it's just ridiculous to shoot on. You want to get your brilliance of Christopher Nolan, but to me as a venue...
Did you go, David?
Oh, I'm going to go. No, not yet. No. But I've seen like all the stuff and I'm a huge U2 fan. I love the work, but it just seems bigger than the artist. You know, it's dwarfing, you know, and it would be like me walking on stage to introduce Kiss surrounded by the Egyptian pyramids and stuff. Well, my God, I feel that my first trip to New York were Purple. Fucking, I'd never felt so diminished.
But I don't think it's about how big it is more than
baby,
the distraction.
Tell my wife.
Right, baby. but really, it's about the distraction because, you know, you can play places as big as that. I mean, the gardens are as big as that, but you're not looking up away from the band.
Yeah, exactly.
You're looking towards the stage.
But you're hearing, as you say, the audio sense, you know, for to use the amount of speakers that they have in there is extraordinary. But all I could think of, Guy, was fucking telling Mr. Gilmore, Mason, well, fucking Avengers Assemble, you know, this is fucking tailor made for you motherfuckers. Are you kidding?
There aren't enough lawyers in the world.
Oh,
I don't think.
My heart. I love it.
Especially around Dark Side. Yeah,
you know, I love, did I?
Can we talk about anything else?
Did I ever
talk about literally anything else?
Did I ever tell you, Guido, I was at a party at Ian Pace's house a lifetime ago, And David G comes up to me and with a Lux Luan, and it's a beautiful resonant voice. He says, "David, may I ask you, am I joining Whitesnake?" I said, "I don't know, but I read in the fucking Daily Mirror that Jimmy Page is joining, and we haven't spoken. So I've got a kid called Mel Galley's come in, but, you know, I'm open to offers." But he'd heard he was joining Whitesnake and needed confirmation. I love him dearly. It was lovely to talk
to him. It seems a bit incongruous. But listen, where that venue is concerned as well.
Pink,
you know,
Snake,
it's 4D.
Come on, Pink Snake. I'm in.
Pink Snake.
Anyway. Oopsie-daisy. Once again, it's dissolved into debauchery.
You're chipper this morning, aren't you? God.
Can I just want to talk about this the sphere as well, because it's 4D, and apparently the seats have wind and smell.
Oh,
and
dear.
I just wondered what bands would you not want to see?
So do the Glasgow Odeons.
I was going to say the beer drinking bands, I think, would be the heavily duty beer. Choir Boys, maybe a no-no. I'm not sure. You know?
But no, I'm thinking like the smell of patchouli oil that might be coming up during Donovan sets. Not that Donovan's going to play the sphere. But,
this is the scenario. When I see these people, this is the new face of touring. No, it fucking ain't. It's a space where you could go in with Pink Floyd, with Dark Side of the Moon, or something small, the Beatles, you know, or whatever, playing an entire album. But Floyd particularly came into my mind because it's just, I saw them when I was 15. They had... the first time I saw them, and I remember talking to, I never met Sid, God bless him, but I remember Richard, I adored, you know, and David, of course, and I'd say, I never met Roger, but one of the first things I heard, I was a huge fan of the very beginning, The Saucerful of Secrets time, Piper at the Gates of Dawn, and I'd gone to see one of those pop packages at 15 in Newcastle City Hall, Amen Corner, The Move, The Nice, which had at the time were backing P.P. Arnold, but Emerson was there, Amen Corner, you know. And then it was the pee break, you know, they did it the old-fashioned way. Ladies and gentlemen, now follows an intermission, but with a Geordie accent. So anyway, everybody bails to the bar and the bathroom, and then suddenly over a tiny tenor, the concert is about to resume. Return to your seat. So one of those things. So there's a mass panic as we burst through these kind of swing doors into the main hall. There's a fucking huge meteor of red flying at us. We all stood there. And it was, they had a huge white, that was the beginning of the special effects, a huge white sheet behind them. And it was all liquid designs, slides and all this kind of stuff.
Yep. Which we do live.
And they
still
play,
have live.
And not what you could have been anybody on fucking stage because they're all in shadow. Not one musician, even in solos or whatever, had a spotlight. But we just sat there and watched this amazing experience. It was just an event.
So did you see Hendrix?
And then Hendrix followed
that. Did you see Hendrix
that night? Blew my fucking mind.
Because I bumped into Roy Wood a few weeks ago, and
I fucking love Roy. Talks. How does he do it? Roy Wood from Wizard Move.
He's doing really well, and he talks fondly about that gig, those shows, and how he tuned up Jimi Hendrix's guitar backstage. You know, it's just
I've
Jimmy's
played the
feet.
City Hall 1,000 times. It's hallowed ground, you know, with the people that I saw.
We played it. Yeah.
But it's fantastic. It's fantastic.
So what about, you know, talking about these sort of extravagant gigs, you know, is the future, because, I mean, we're all going, sadly, in the direction of demise. Is the future like the ABBA show? Is that it?
But I heard that's like a blueprint for similar experiences. But as I say, it's like Guy said, it's almost unnecessary to have your players there. I love live soul music, and U2 has moments of absolute spiritual energy going between the audience and the songs. It's a glorious experience. It truly is. They can make a stadium, a church, you know, a cathedral of kinds. But even that, I'm going, wow, you can't even see the fucking guys from the nosebleeds, you know?
No.
But
Pastor Bono.
It's interesting, though, with what you're saying there, David, because my thought, when I went to see the ABBA show, there's a bit where they go off, because there's a live band playing, and then there's, I mean, it looks like it's four people.
Seems
like you're seeing four people on stage. But there's a bit where they go off.
I fucking know ABBA. What do you mean there's four? I don't fucking ABBA.
All right. And anyway, but they go off, I don't know why, to get re-rendered or something.
Oh, dear.
And,
re-rendered.
No, and the backing singers come up and do a song, and the place goes mad. Yeah.
Are they real? The backing singers?
It's
they're
the
real.
Music.
Yeah, they're real.
It's the music is like brings people. They created perfect pop music.
But I mean, I suppose if you were going to put together, I mean, obviously they're going to one day it'll be the Beatles and they'll do it with the Rolling Stones.
Oh,
but if you're going to put together a Deep Purple sort of White Snake evening. You know, I'm talking about 50 years' time, David. They could go through, they could have Ian, they could have you. You know, I mean, it's possible to embrace the whole of Purple.
I don't know. It's not on my radar. I've got a full dance card right now. You know, and as you were talking and both of you were mentioning about the lawyers and stuff, et cetera, in the room to get the Floyd, you know. But the Floyd guy was in. You know, those guys, you're working with Nick, you know. Sadly, we've lost Richard, who I adore. But Guy was perfect in that scenario. I loved seeing and hearing him in there. But it's all that lawyers. There's no communication. Richie and I'm very happy to say, buried our 30-year hatchet after we lost John Lord. I'm very happy to say I'm in touch with him and Candace, his beautiful wife. And Glenn Hughes, of course, my soul brother. I have no connection with any of the other guys. Wish him well or whatever, but there's just no connection at all, really. Did you get your gifts? As an aside, did you get your gifts this morning?
I haven't.
Oh.
Yes, I'm wet. Ah, thank you so much.
Oh, I'm sure you get fucking coffee table books delivered every fucking day.
No, I never got it today. It went to Ben, and our producer has texted me, and it's on its way, apparently.
Oh, okay.
I haven't received it yet. But thank you so much. I'm looking forward to it.
It's a total boner. You'll love it, GK.
So what is it?
It's like a 400-page book of my beautiful musicians, our Purple tour and everything. There was an issue with the production of the scenario, and I took whatever was remaining of these books, and I have 200 of these books now. We're selling through whitesnake.com, the online aspect. And that goes online, I think, at noon today. It's a pretty cool book to have. You know, it's a lot of fun to read.
Is it full of photographs from the time when you first joined?
Yeah, making the record. And, oh, no. Just this whole, my band that made this tribute to Deep Purple. And of course, we revamped it and everything. We released it 8 years ago, and then I was working. I've got a whole new fabulous audio team, a whole new creative team at my studio, and I was working on remixing a project, and my guy Chris Collier says, "Oh my God, I can't wait to get my hands on this one." And I said, "What, the Purple Album? It's not." He said, No. I want to do this." And so that started the ball rolling. I spoke to my new guys and they were absolutely down. I'm not sure if you're aware of a keyboard player called Derek Sherinian. Derek was in...
No, I don't know.
Yeah, he was in Dream Theater, where he's fantastic.
Oh, yeah.
He's Black Country Communion with Glenn Hughes and Joe Bonamassa. He's fantastic. We've never actually met in person, but I've been a great admirer of his scorching organ. So he brought that to... He was a kind of... We were on tour, and he said... "Can I do that? Can I?" Absolutely. And it's like the spirit of John Lord and his performance. But honest to God, that's nothing, taking nothing away from how extraordinary he is as a keyboard player. But he just pulled out that 70s fucking fiery performance, and it takes the whole stuff to an entirely new dimension.
Why did you first want to reapproach those songs? Was it? Did you feel that you never had enough say in them, and they something that you could make better?
No. The interesting thing was when I got the what's included on this purple package, which validated me doing this, was my new guys found a huge blue trunk under the studio, and I said, "What blue trunk?" We had a couple of problems in here with this and that, not very pleasant. So I didn't know what was going to be in this thing. As Guy knows, and of course, Sarah, who we both love, just had terrible loss recently, which was heartbreaking. I adored Judith, without a doubt, and huge, huge love. It's usually something sad that connect Sarah and I, but I adore her. As you know, I've known her since she was a toddler, for God's sake. Anyway, so John Lord calls me in 2012. He said, "I've been diagnosed with pancreatic cancer." Oh, dear God. He said, "But I'm going to kick this thing, Davey lad. I'm going to kick this thing. Will you do something purple related with me?" I went, "John, I'll do whatever the fuck you want. Just kick it, you know?" And as we know, that didn't happen. But what happened was I dug out all the purple stuff. I, you know, was involved with 3 studio records and stuff, and I hadn't really listened to them. Every so often I'd played Burn or something at the request of my musicians. But I didn't go that far back. So it was fascinating for me to hear as a 21-year-old these songs, you know, being thrown in the deep end, no pun intended.
Yeah.
But the guys were great, particularly Ritchie Blackmore was a mentor, and John Lord particularly. It was just a raconteur, you know, bon vivant, stories up the yin-yang, the guy you want to have dinner with and shoot the shit with and drink with, you know, and a very generous human being. I miss him dearly, but I swear to God, his music is so alive in me. I can remember our sessions, our jokes, our late nights, you know, all of those things are vivid to me. That's how much of an impression he made on me.
Same.
So I'm digging through this stuff, and I thought, wow, these fucking guys were great players. And I could hear a lot of naivety into me, but the support of them and the lovable Martin Birch, God rest his soul, they all fucking encouraged me, but particularly Ritchie. Because I'd been writing for local bands, and I'm truly honored to be able to feature the local band that made the demo that Ian Pace heard and called Ritchie and said, "The guy's rat-ass drunk, but he's got a good tone. It might be worth checking him out." So that's the Fabulosa Brothers. And those demos I found in this trunk, right, of all my mother's possessions. I have behind me all my mother's darts awards. She's got more darts awards than I have platinums and golds, I swear.
Sorry, David, darts or dance?
Darts, darts, darling.
starts.
Yeah,
wow.
She was she was fantastic. And one of the most impressive things, even after joining Deep Purple, that she would tell her friends about, he can drink a whole bowl of brandy and still play darts.
That's what makes a man.
Oh, totally. So this was, to me, a gift from my mom after 30 years, and also a validation to go, you're doing right for this, to do this 50th anniversary, you know. And
so hang on, I just want to get the time. So you said you found this trunk under your studio. What was it?
Well, what happened, my mum passed 30 years ago while I was working with Pagey Guy connected.
Right.
And I'd gone home to be with her. And my aunt, who I've also lost now, I sound terribly irresponsible, but these people were incredibly dear to me, profound. But the she packed up this stuff beautifully. I don't know what I was doing or whatever. I had no recollection of my mom's personal effects being sent to me in this amazing trunk, and everything was like pristinely wrapped, beautiful, you know. I think one of the darts awards was broken, but it's still pride of place in my studio.
So is this an old leather trunk?
It was a crap cheap one, but you know, this is it just contained treasure.
I've got one of these here. I've got a really big suitcase just outside my studio here, and it was 12 years ago my parents died, or 14 years ago, and it's full of all the stuff that I thought I needed to keep in their house.
Yes.
I mean, what is sad is you do get the bin liner and you tip out drawers and you just think, well, all these bits, a lot of it is no good, but some of it is all in there, and I haven't got the heart to open it.
Oh, well, I didn't know what it was, Gary. You know, that's the thing. I said, just open it, because there'd been some skullduggery up my studio. I didn't know whether to be a fucking body or what. It took four big guys struggling up from downstairs.
Oh, wow.
And then we open it up, and it's like almost, you know, when you hear those heavenly choirs, you know, that was a bit Uriah.
Oh, wow.
That was
a bit Uriah. Came out of it. I could
see. Sorry.
The spotlight hit your face.
I think the morphine suppository just kicked in.
Was that a bitchy remark about Uriah?
I don't know.
Surely not.
My Deep Purple impression, you know.
What's
give us a song,
Kerslake?
Dave. Have you got your checkbook? Lee Kerslake, yeah. He was a fun guy. Okay, so we open this stuff and I go, oh my God. There are all these tapes. Purple's office, because I was traveling everywhere. I was like of no fixed abode. I'd given him my mum's home address, you know, because she at least had some stability. So they would send shit of mine back up. And one of the things was the audition tape that got me in the door of...
And that's the cover versions, right? That's Dancing in the Street.
What we would do...
You don't sound rat-ass, David.
Well, you know, that was Pacey's words. And he said he's also, to Rishi, he's got a sense of humour. Rishi said, what do you mean? He said, well, he sent a picture of himself as a fucking Boy Scout. And that is the fact, because that was no picture, no return call. So that was it. My mother made me swear, which I wrote in the letter, Dear Deep Purple. You know, my mother wants
Dear
this
Deep
back.
Purple.
It wasn't.
Deep.
It wasn't. A, yeah, it wasn't. A, yeah, it wasn't a, a digital age.
Mr. Purple.
Oh, Mr. Purple. As you can see, I'm always prepared. You know.
So hang on. Did the Fabulosa brothers know when they recorded this tape that they were actually recording the tape that would get you to leave the band?
No. What had happened was that two of my guys, Alan Fernley and Otty McLaughlin, had record stores.
And what? So Otty McLaughlin? Like, what was that name?
Yeah. Oh, Otty's fucking great. He's the percussionist on there. He's a diamond. I must tell you, with the last 50 years of my experiences in the music business, and you can both testify to how challenging it can be to one's integrity, to one's humanity, you know, to one's purpose. And these guys, five guys, could not have been more generous. I'd been in touch with one of them regularly, mostly surgical stuff. But the
chopping bits
older,
off him.
chopping bits off and replacing other bits. But I swear to God. This is the other thing. Before I get into their generosity, which was unbounded, it was extraordinary, and reconnected them as people and reconnected them as musicians. They're meeting once a week and they're playing and stuff. It's glorious for me to hear. There are no negatives, which is usually not the case with any kind of dealings in this business. But one of the things, we pulled this out from Strawberry Studios in Stockport. Used to be 10cc.
Yeah, because I was going to say, David, because the way you've talked about them in the past is it sounds like some sort of awful thing of a cassette player in a church hall or something. But these demos are great.
Well, I can't remember the studio. Yeah. I just remember a very insensitive engineer, which led me to the spare guitar case filled with raw, butch, terribly alcoholic cider. Because he said, there's this microphone hanging from the ceiling. I said, do you have a hand mic I can sing? I've never sung in until anything like this. Oh, and he goes, if you can't sing, you can't sing. Oh my God, straight to the booze, which actually was the same with the Deep Purple audition. I'd snuck in a bottle of Bell's Afore You Go whiskey, which my friend Roger Barker, who'd driven me down for the audition, had hidden from me. He said he didn't want me getting rat ass before the, you know, but of course the Coverdale knows, and I found it immediately. I'm having quick sips of this, and then Lordy comes out of the bathroom. Would you mind? Thank you so very much. Then Glenn Hughes is like, and the bottle's going down desperately, you know. But what I hear in those demos is my fucking big inspiration of my youth, once I learned how to project, was Steve Marriott of The Small Faces. I just thought Stevie was just the bee's knees.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. It's so interesting. It's always interesting, you know, that connection because the other person, obviously, without I don't want to upset you, Dave. The last thing I want to hear is, you know, elements of Robert Plant and what he was doing. And of course, Robert Plant was a massive Small Faces fan.
I'm sorry, I lost audio there for a moment. I'm so terribly sorry.
but both you and Plant totally into Steve Marriott.
Can you get Ben? There's something wrong with the audio here.
Let it go, Moving Gal. Right Gal. Along. Let it go. Let it go, man.
Gal. Hey, which reminds me.
It's not worth it.
I've had a tune going through my fucking head, and I can't remember what it is. And you being so musical in your bits and pieces, I'm just wondering if you could help me out on this one.
Try it.
Cue.
We'll try.
I think it's fucking amazing, and it's on my Malibu Beach House songs. You know, Tony, I know there's kind of interesting energy there, but Tony was very generous with my wife, Cindy, in contributing to her Food That Rocks book. So...
Oh, yes.
So that
yes,
is yes, a yes. beautiful yes, song. Course. Beautiful song.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
So in a nutshell, in essence, we find this tape. It's absolutely perfectly packaged. And we put it on a two-track reel-to-reel, and it's digital garbage. And the analog is, it's a, you know, the half inch or whatever. And quarter inch, excuse me. Mm-mm. And it's impossible. I'm going, oh, fuck. And I can hear the frequency of a conga being popped out. And I'm going, my co-producer here is a guy called Tom Gordon. He's a professor at UNR. Mm-hmm. And he took it to the all the boffins at there to try to decode this thing. And he sent me a video with it playing. He said, I'm so sorry, David. It's not going to work. But I'm from Yorkshire. You don't fucking give up. The only difference to me between possible and impossible, that impossible takes just a bit longer. So we kept exploring it. We got in touch with the guys at Weta, because I met them all years ago in New Zealand. They have developed that software, I'm sure you're aware, called Marl, which is why Giles Martin can remix the Beatles. He can isolate mono tapes. It's mind-blowing, but it's basically all for the Beatles. And we, even with the nice relationship I had with Richard Taylor, which was nothing to do with sexual, but a really pleasant with all of the team. We took like 40 guests to the festival. Amazing to walk through their workshop and see all of the I was holding the Sword of Aragorn, you know, from Lord of the Rings.
What else do they do there? Sorry, fill me in.
It's Peter Jackson and Richard Taylor, you know, but they have boffins. And if you remember that astonishing...
Yeah.
I saw George, God rest his soul, let me see it was called The Long and Winding Road from the Beatles sessions. It was really unpleasant to hear the arguing. And thank God it never came out. But what Peter Jackson did with that Get Back movie, that's when he sent his team, we can't put this out, the audio sucks. So that's why the boffins went in and developed this software, which is when there are certain, the same as the internet, there are aspects of AI that are an anathema to me, but there are other aspects that help me decipher this demo tape with my guys and take me back over 50 years and those guys too, you know, to reconnect us and to remember this is what opened the door. And it may inspire somebody, you know, because I'm not singing fucking great, but enough to inspire Ian Paice with all the, surrounded by all these tapes of people, because the whole fucking world was trying to join Purple. Called Richie Blackmore and said, I think I found someone we could try out, you know?
Was there a moment recently when you were looking at those tapes and trying to discover what was on them? There must have been a moment when you suddenly heard your voice coming back from the past.
Yes, yeah. And then I could hear a little bit of Stevie Marriott, you know, pretty wild.
Have been extraordinary.
You know, because I fucking adored Stevie. And the last time I saw him before he passed, he had a packet of three, and he was playing in a club in New York, owned by the original Aerosmith manager. And he was sadly, heartbreakingly, was having to play to pay off his bar bill. It was not the Steve Marriott that... You know, and the other memory, I'm standing with fucking Superman, Christopher Reeves, who looked exactly like fucking Clark Kent. And we got on like a fucking house on fire, you know. Beautiful gentleman, lovely man, you know. But it was heartbreaking to see one of my total heroes in such disrepair. It's very sad.
No, my brother went to see a show in L.A. that Stevie was giving with his packet of three, and he said it was weird. They spoke to him afterwards and he was packing his own gear away. He was back there.
I couldn't finish his book. I couldn't finish the book where it just became so dark. So dark. I put it down. I just couldn't read it, you know.
Because Stevie never really experienced the kind of heightened arena rock.
Well, I don't know. Humble Pie kicked ass over here. Him and Peter Frampton, Jerry Shirley and Clem Clemson, they, you know, they had pretty good success. But the demons of extraneous indulgences sometimes connect with people and, oh, my God, it breaks your fucking heart.
In an interview, Steve Marriott saying, he said, well, no, this is where I belong, back here, playing in the clubs. You know, this is really what it's all about. And you got the feeling that... He didn't necessarily really mean that.
It wasn't a matter of choice. Yeah. Hey, when I got Whitesnake together, all of the weekly newspapers had their local pub bands on the front, you know, it was the height of punk. And I was a fucking dinosaur at 26, 27, you know. I couldn't get the money to put an album together. I had to do an EP, four-track EP called Snakebite, which is now a fucking collector's item. And we were selling them out the back of the Robbie Dennis from EMI. He drove up to Newcastle City Hall with a trunk full, a boot, excuse me, gentlemen, a boot full of these white EPs. That's how it fucking started.
And while we're there, of course, Bernie Marsden.
Oh, fuck. You know, it's interesting. Bernie called me. I was talking to Joe Bonamassa. They were very close.
Yeah.
After I said, I hate to tell you this, but I've just had Bernie's wife has just called me. Oh, my God. He's going, you're fucking joking. I just spoke to him. Both of us felt we'd just spoken to him, but it was actually back in spring. Mm-hmm. Now, Bernie called me, and I was just finishing my workout. And I went, hey, son, how you doing? And he sounded a bit wheezy. And I said, you sound a bit wheezy. How are you doing, kid? And he goes, just a bit of respiratory stuff, a bit of a cold. But I know that COVID was still doing the ugly fucking delivering the milk and shit. You know, it's awful. It's not out of our scenario yet. So I said, you please take a... I just wanted to tell you, I've been listening to some of our early stuff. And he said, you had a song called Love to Keep You Warm on the first Whitesnake album. He said, David, I just want to tell you, that's a perfect craftsman writing for the musicians he's working with and something that suits his voice. I went, wow, Bernie, you know, it's fucking lovely to hear. I really appreciate that. Let's stay in touch and you take care. And went off to shower or whatever. So then a couple of weeks ago, Fran, his beautiful wife, gets in touch with me. I hate to tell you, but Bernie passed overnight. And I went, oh, my God, Fran. Yeah, you don't want to engage somebody on text and go, well, what happened, you know? She said, the doctor said his body just gave up.
He had an infection, I think, didn't he? An infection and it just...
Well, you know, I...
Poor man.
Yeah, it's...
He's been on our show. He was on our show and it was great to... And it was great to connect with him once we
He's a great, we got on great because he had great stories. Yeah. The thing that gets me, I'm not interested in sitting down and talking to people who, congratulations on graduating business school, but what's your fucking story? Mm. You know, come on, give me some anecdotes. That's what keeps me, you know, my wife and I, I'm working in my studio. She's working in her studio preparing a podcast. Very excited for her. We're both really busy. We're learning stuff all the time, keeping the relationship alive and kicking and extraordinarily fulfilling.
What's her podcast?
It's not started yet. I can't give it away. I'll get into trouble. Okay. But I'll let you know when if I announce stuff, it's going to pressure her on social media, as you know. So absolutely. It's going to be whenever she's ready.
Going back to Bernie, obviously he had us an amazing guitar collection. I was lucky enough to have a little play on The Beast, which was his famous 59ers.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Does Joe Bonamassa now?
He knows about that. That was actually a little bit of a clue when I saw he was going to be selling his particularly, because that's on all the Whitesnake records, all the early Whitesnake records we did together. That was very much the identity we established, was two Les Pauls, you know, big beef stuff. But when I saw that, I went, oh, fuck. I also saw what he was looking at for his gold top, and I'm going, oh, I hope he's okay. Meaning on not necessarily health, but in other aspects, you know. But I know the feeling. You know, we're moving a bunch of stuff out. My new guys have coming in and said, what are you using this for? It's like Titanic shit, you know. Get rid of it. Give it to somebody who could use it, you know. But those things are incredible instruments. Guido, you know, you're a player, you're a guitar player. Instruments are huge. I've just treated myself, well, my wife doesn't know yet, to a dark purple 50s Les Paul. It's just come out dark purple. It's sexy as fuck, particularly as it's Purple's my 50th anniversary this year, and I just bought, which I adore. Well,
they basically just came up with it for your excuse, didn't they?
But I've got an amazing collection of guitars, acoustic and electric here. Barry guitar, baritone guitar, which is fucking, I love twang, you know. And the other one, a Gretsch White Falcon, which Jimmy used a lot on, it's just a sexy, sexy
guitar. Well, I tell you, because funny, because in the old days, we never thought about guitars as being worth it, did we? Even in the early 80s, we never thought they were all going to be such value.
Well, a lot of them were pieces of shit. There were, you know, I would say some of these like star-shaped guitars would make a nice campfire. You know, you can't go wrong with a Telecaster, a Stratocaster. Lennon had his Epiphone, that fucking Epiphone, exactly. Which was almost like a White Falcon, you know. But the fascinating thing is everything has value. But it should start with being valuable to you. You know, and that's the situation. I was at an amazing party in Beverly Hills at the Greenhouse or something. This is early 70s. Bob Dylan, Led Zeppelin, the Allman Brothers, the Faces, Joni Mitchell, who I almost fell to her feet, but she just wanted to get laid. And I was talking to Cameron Crowe at the time, and she's going, "Hi, Cam, who's your friend?" And she's looking me up and down, and like my girlfriend, who became my first wife, was in the bathroom doing a bump. But which brings me to Scooter, who was one of the most beautiful men. He was the tour manager for Allman Brothers. And I don't know whether I ever told you, but Allman Brothers was a major blueprint, early Allman Brothers, for Whitesnake.
Oh.
The whole slide guitar, melodic guitar, keyboards and stuff. Yeah. Yeah, but the way they made symphonic rock, they took established songs, and that's what I did with the Fabulosa Brothers. We took established songs and funked them up, made them more like, you know, like Sly and the Family Stone would do, how Dancing in the Street or Everybody's Talking or whatever. Just, you know, we loved
that. Great,
funk,
by the way.
Rock,
I love both of those, by the way, the version of Dancing in the Street and Everybody's Talking. They are great, and that's
thank
exactly
you, darling.
What you said, yeah.
But the, you know, Scooter said, and this is before I had, because I'm working with Hendrix, my muse, you know, he's fucking Strats, Richie Strat, you know. And he's going, "David, if Scooter, beautiful guy, David, if you ever need any Les Pauls, let me know." Oh, fuck, I didn't know anybody who played a Les Paul. And he was going to get me them and they would have been late 50s. Bless his cotton socks, you know. Yeah.
I've got a guitar story just recently because when Spandau got back together 2010, I got all my guitars out of the lockup, and one of them, well, more than one, was missing.
Oh, fuck.
And the one that was missing was a black Strat that I played on stage during True at Live Aid. And so it's on the Live Aid film, and I was really upset that this guitar went missing because it's a personal guitar for me and my family. This is the guitar I play.
Who else had a key? Who else had a key? That's what you have to do, Sherlock.
I can't get into that on here. But it had gone. It basically on Twitter that we were talking about earlier, a picture appeared in a shop up in the north of England, remaining nameless.
Don't you be blaming the fucking North, Gary Kemp.
He is, David. That's exactly what he's doing.
It just so happens it was up there. And anyway, to cut a long story short, I have got this guitar back. There was no provenance that went with it. There was no letter saying it was mine. It was, but whoever had sold it in the first place knew where they.
Miracles do happen,
probably out of my lockup.
And that, you know.
Yeah.
Thank you, angels, for getting that back to you. That's amazing.
It's important.
Yeah. Are you still playing? Are you saucer full of secrets?
We just came back from Australia. We just did like 10. We went to Australia for 10 days.
So you just before we spoke, I did some video for you. You were going on tour.
That's right.
But was the raconteurs, wasn't it?
No. It's raconteurs. You never say raconteurs.
You're such a raconteur.
I know, but that's the whole point. I know, but yeah, you do it on purpose, I'm sure.
I am. But how did that go? It went fun?
But It was good. The shows were all good. You know,
and this was Nicky.
It was fantastic.
With Nicky,
who was the only person who didn't get jet lag. It actually, where he literally just sailed through it. And we were all just in a complete state for days. It got to the point after about 4 or 5 days where Nick actually said, can you all stop talking about sleep?
That's it. Totally.
I mean, you know, in the old days when we used to tour, you do anything, you take anything to not sleep. Now we're taking anything we can to sleep.
You know, I had a drummer who would do a toot and fall asleep immediately. He'd take a Valium and be jacked for 2 days. It's metabolism. It's just, go figure, you know? But those long journeys, man. I had lunch with Akio Morita, the Sony guy, and I was just so profuse in my gratitude for the long-distance traveler, the Walkman. You know, my God, flying London, Japan over either Alaska or Moscow, you know, it just made the journey. I became a domestic DJ, putting my tapes together, tapes for shagging, tapes for meditating. So, you know, all that soul tape, 60s Tamla, chess blues.
Needs the Cubs mixtapes. We need those.
David, can we get you on? I want to get you on. David Coverdale's Music to Shag To. That's got to be a box set, surely. Comes with a purple condom.
Basically, that's, you know, slide it in slow and easy, I heard, you know.
David, I wanted just to mention the fact Rudolf Isley died today.
Oh, fuck, I just tweeted it, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I know how much the Isley Brothers meant to you,
right?
Well,
I'd first heard Twist and Shout by them, even though the Beatles' version was fucking blistering and Lennon's vocal is just as breathtaking. But Twist and Shout was, I heard them, because I was just this huge fucking 60s soul fan, you know? And when Ernie started, and Hendrix played with... influenced.
Hendrix played with the Isley Brothers.
Huge. So when you hear Who's That Lady and the just breathtaking fuzz box.
It was amazing. It was a really distinctive fuzz sound.
Beautiful soul song. Great singer, as always, great playing. And then suddenly, a scorching electric fucking rock solo. Yeah. It was a super transition. Yeah. Super. But yeah, another loss, man. You know, it's
a late 50s.
It's getting a lot.
Late 50s, their first single. Shout was their first single, wasn't it? About 57 or something, that Lulu covered in the end.
Yeah.
I mean, they go deep back into history.
Yeah, back in those days, you know, you had Race Records and all that kind of stuff. You had sort of lame white copies of... Little Richard is one of the most electrifying singers I've ever heard, and I've got his autograph, and I treasure it. Who Hendrix played for as well, and Wilson Pickett, the Wicked, you know? Yeah. He got his chops, man. He built all this. And that's with Hendrix. He harnessed all of these things and then came out. It was like putting... Dylan, you know, surreal lyrics, you know, the blues, funk, experimentation, feedback, soul music and showbiz and performance, put them all in the fucking blender, and his work stands up, you know, today. Mm-hmm. As does, I have to say, Cream. You know, I could listen to, you know, the Felix, any of the fucking Cream stuff. And Jeff, of course. Have I seen you since we lost Jeff?
I think
it's turned into an obituary show.
I think we did. We did that obituary last time.
Oh, my heart. Because on this Purple album, I've got an instrumental I wrote some years ago called Itchy Fingers, which was like that kind of yarn, you know, Wired, the Jeff Beck Wired with Jan Hammer, where it was kind of a rock tempo with a... So that's in the middle of a song called You Fool No One on this. And my guys just scorch my guitar players, the Mustard, Red Beach and Joel Hoekstra. But I dedicated on this record because it was originally for me something to send to Jeff. And I miss him terribly.
So you've got a book out. You've got a book out at the same time. So is the box set and a book both available?
We've got this. It's like one of the most modest ones. It's got a ton of new stuff on, and of course, all remixed and stuff. But no, the book is a separate entity. It's 200 copies that I got from the publisher, and we've given them to our merch company, 310. So hopefully they'll be at an agreeable price. They'll be coming online today, I think. And they're beautiful books. There's some of the hologram. I think I sent you the posh ones. And some what they call the standard issue. But they're beautiful, and it's extremely timely, but it's all related to my amazingly my 50th anniversary of getting the job with Deep Purple around this time, 50 years ago.
How does it feel even saying that, to me. David? How does it, you don't know the idea?
Well, it's easier than saying 72, guy. man. Yeah.
What a great testament that 50 years, you know, you're still there, still doing that, and you're celebrating that. It's amazing.
What a year 73 was, though. What a year. Dark Side of the Moon.
Oh, my God, yeah. Well, when the first time I heard Dark Side of the Money, it was on one of the fucking crew had made a cassette to play before Purple came on. And I go, because I was aware of all of the early Pink Floyd stuff, as you the stuff that you guys are doing. A lot of the Sid stuff. I fucking loved Sid. I never met him, sadly. I adore him. And always wonder, what would you have done, you know? Did you see the other day, Lennon would have been 83, John Lennon.
Wow.
Just extraordinary.
Yeah.
But anyway, so, and fucking Paul's going back out, my God. But anyway, so I'm going, wow, what the fuck is that? Dum, 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 boom, boom, boom. And these like stereo things going on, I'm going, I had no idea who it was, you know? Because it was so... such a fucking immense arc from Saucerful of Secrets, Piper at the Gates of Dawn, Medal, Omagama.
There's nothing to recognize there.
No indication. Because when the guy started, those songs I would listen on a crappy transistor under the bed sheets in the old caricature of to Radio Scarborough, Radio 270, and hearing like that phasey fucking thing, but Arnold Lane, See Emily Play, oh fucking Gnome. I've got a bike, you can ride it if you like. It's got a basket, a bell that rings and things to make it look good.
Radio Scarborough was playing.
Don't
this
you diminish Scarborough. Don't
I'm
you
not.
Fucking diminish.
No, I'm bigging up Radio Scarborough. I think it's fantastic if that's where you heard these songs.
The pirate shit. The pirate stuff just outside the three-mile limit. What did you guys have in London?
Next time you're available, we're all in the same town, you must come on stage and sing Arnold Lane with us.
I would love that.
Oh, man. Didn't Bowie do that with the boys at a charity thing?
It was at a Gilmore show. It wasn't a charity thing, David. It was when we were playing at the Albert Hall, and it was one of Rick Wright's last ever shows. And it was Bowie's last ever gig to a paying audience. And yet what was amazing was he got up and he did Arnold Lane, and he knew that song inside, outside, up. It's like he'd been singing it every night for the last 40 years.
Yeah.
It was amazing.
He probably had.
Yeah, we're great.
I would make my son playlist as I was driving him to school. And number one, by accident, he heard the Goon shows. And I went, oh, I'm sorry. That's Daddy's, you know, secret fucking player stuff. You know, Peter Sellers and Spike Milligan and stuff. And he goes, no, what's that? And then suddenly Bluebottle goes, he's fallen into water. You know, one of them. And my son's cracking up at like Harry six Seacham. Or seven. So I'm going, he is my child, you know. And then I would introduce him to all this, like the Arnold Lane, the Gnome, Bike, all of those lovely Sid Barrett songs. And he was a big fan of Sweet. And he went, don't Queen sound like Sweet?
That's
said a bit.
True.
He's right. He's right.
That's very true.
And obviously the Goons, a massive influence on lots of bands like the Beatles. That
Well, when you hear those old Beatles things, they're all doing Goon voices.
That's right.
That's right. John, can you get it on vinyl, this box set?
Oh, yes. I have one here. I can't open it for you, Chalmers.
Why, have you not got Excalibur with you?
Double. It's, as a matter of fact, I do. It's never far for me.
But this, the Lady of the Lake has popped up.
Yeah, but this is the Lady of Lake Tahoe. Yeah, she's at her studio now, I think. It's gold vinyl. So It's very sexy.
Wow.
And
none more gold.
So, yeah. So this is, we've put on as much new aspects. I worked something I've wanted to do for many years. My co-producer, Tom Gordon, is Mr. Reno. And you enjoyed Reno for a time.
I did enjoy Reno.
And had to leave before we buried you somewhere.
It sounds like a great song title, doesn't it? I enjoyed Reno.
I shot a man in Reno just to watch him die. Oh, hey!
Is Reno going to get a sort of small sphere?
There already is one, like a fucking big golf ball, but I think it's for bowling. I said to Tom, he said, you know, if we do a project with strings, he said, I know just the guy, the string arranger for the Reno Philharmonic, Jeff DePauli. I said, I'll bring him in. Let's have a meeting. Oh, fuck. You'd love him. He's got Mordor license plate. You know, I swear to God, the only thing missing is a battleship, a pair of fucking binoculars, you know, looking for German U-boats. He has the big beard there, you know, like the old royal family, Tsar Nicholas stuff. And total character. You'd love him, G. He sat down, listened to Soldier of Fortune. We stripped it down. We did two arrangements with a string quartet, two violins, viola, and a cello, two alternate arrangements that are featured on here with these beautiful women, four amazing sensitive players, and different arrangements, one to accompany Joel Hoekstra on classical guitar, and the other one is just me with the string quartet, which is... we'll be putting out, I think, in about 2 weeks. But there's a lot of new stuff in there. Of course... My beautiful brothers from the north, the Fabulosa brothers, I am so proud to have them, you know, featured on the, on this record. And it's been
thanks to your mum.
My mum, I swear to God, absolutely. There's no question it was a validation. That's you're doing right. You know, I had to celebrate this incredible event somehow, and really this is the best that I can do, you know.
Are you still in touch with any of
Glenn and I I'm pushing his American tour. He's doing actually a tribute to The Time in Purple, which will be fucking marvelous. I've got Joel and Joel Hoekstra and Brandon Gibbs doing a European tour, like Simon Garfunkel and thing. But they're, you know, keeping the Whitesnake fans up and excited.
You going to go out on the road, David?
I don't know. I'm dealing with so interesting, this aging shit. I have issues in my shoulders. This is the rotator cuff. The blessing of arthritis, of course, which I hope you guys never have to experience. It really will depend on my health. I've got an incredibly supportive bunch of musicians who are all staying busy. You know, I have enough material to if we wanted to do an album, but we do have, we are starting now working on the video from the farewell tour and for a project there, you know, with Tanya, your old friend Guy, who adores you, another foolish woman who you lost her heart, the Medusa of rock, my Irish ambassador. You know, so and the guys, Dino, all of the guys, I swear to God, they just shone. It was just a beautiful experience. It really was. You've had Steve Vai on, I think, haven't you?
No, we haven't. No.
Have you had Steve?
No, we haven't.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, you haven't? Oh, Steven's fantastic. He was actually playing at the last show, which turned into the last Whitesnake show at the Hellfest Festival in France. And Steven had just played, and we'd been talking and texting and going, you know, do you want to come on and jam? Because my philosophy is once a snake, always a snake, you know? So you actually have been a former member. You can add that to your CV. You've been a member of Whitesnake with the Restless Heart Project.
Yes.
My boy.
Definitely a snake. I'm with proud.
But yeah, it's so exciting.
Snake.
The response is so far. It's out, coming out. One-eyed trout. What? The responses I saw before getting on the with the Marx Brothers here was fucking glorious on online. You know, people know that I'm not going buy this. Please, whatever you do, buy it. Save my fucking life. It's nothing to do with it. It's there if you want it. And it's a labor of love. It's this new team I'm working with who just bust ass for me. And it's a joy for me to come and work with them. Young guys, young, hip gunslingers, you know. And I think we're going to be able to create some beautiful things.
Thank you so much.
Oh, fuck, are you kidding?
Always a joy. Always a joy.
Well, I'll let you know when Cindy gets a thing on and you can interview her and get all the actual truth as opposed to my embellished shit.
Well, you definitely keep us abreast.
Steady on, leave her breasts alone.
We can't wait.
They're mine and mine only.
But obviously, we can't wait till you do something else and we get you back. Because, you know, you are a fixture. You're a fixture here, David.
Whenever you want. Always a pleasure. It's always a pleasure. So I think you were offline, Guy. We've sent you guys. I actually sent Ben, you, and Gary gifts, so you should get soon, which will be in celebration of this particular day. And always a pleasure. Take care, my loves. All the best.
I think I may have said this before. It's Deus Ex Machina, isn't it? Which is meant to be that time in a Greek play when on some sort of elevation, down comes God and he tells all the subjects what they should be thinking. But he's just such a great personality to spend some time with. Not that you get much of a word in edgeways.
No, it is quite fun. Because I worry that people might, you know, when we do, David, is that people go, oh my God, they keep interrupting. It's like, we have to.
Otherwise, we're not on the show.
Otherwise, we might as well not turn up, you know, because he'll just go. I mean, we could probably just stick pictures of us.
But is it enthusiasm?
But it's just so brilliant. And also, one little thing I took away from that is I'm never going to be able to not think of Jan Harmer. From now on, I've never ever heard that name pronounced like that.
And also, I'm taking away, never mention Robert Plant when you're in the same room as David.
That was the most magnificent swerving there, wasn't it? And I can't believe you tried again.
I thought he genuinely didn't hear me, but of course, he was...
That's because he's a pro. Yeah, he's a pro. Well, but yeah, top swerve.
So thank you so much for listening again to David Coverdale, but he's all, you know, he's the kind of... He's our other brother.
You love
him.
Well, that's why we have him. Yeah, he's our brother. And it's also because we know you are our audience. Love him. Like we do.
So, well, thank you. And thank you to Ian, who's been our producer this week. And Ben, who's always our producer. And it's good night from me.
And it's good night from them.
Rock On Tours is produced by Gimme Sugar Productions for Warner Music Group UK.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.